This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hit my music!
Break it down!
Oh, you didn't know?
Stand back!
I'm a nice man!
Mamacita!
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Eat me!
Let's go!
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I am your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 122, and it's a look at some Survivor Series themes. And today I am joined by a returning guest here on the show. He's a contributor at Voices of Wrestling. It's Jeremy Sexton. Hello again, Jeremy.
Hello, hello. Great to be here.
I'm glad you're back. Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's been a while since your first appearance here on the show, pre-pandemic, actually. Though we did meet a few months ago in person at the All Out Barbecue, which was just a lot of fun, and I met your wife there as well, of course, and we ate a lot of food there, I think. Just a bunch of various meats all cooked up by Chris Samsa and his wife. And it was damn good, but it was a lot of food, Jeremy.
It was. And I made the mistake of hitting brunch before we went to the barbecue, but we still did some damage, so it was all good.
Yeah. I mean, eating all of that meat before going to a four-hour wrestling show, that's a risk right there. That's a pretty big risk. But, you know, luckily everything was okay. God was on my side that night, I think, thankfully. But
yes.
But anyway, how are you doing, Jeremy? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, eating a bunch of food and then going to a wrestling show is what people did for the first few Survivor Series, you know, given that they were on Thanksgiving. So, you know, there you go. Just tying it all in. But I'm good. Yeah, I'm gearing up for Match of the Year season already. And so been working on some behind the scenes things to make voting, and most importantly, you know, for myself and Rich, counting the voting a little easier this year. And so, yeah, been working hard at that. And yeah, you know, things are going good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always fun when Match of the Year comes around to be in the Slack chat, and, you know, Rich will be like, oh, these morons, they didn't spell the name right, and there's no date on this one, there's no company on this one, ah, these dumb bastards. So hopefully this year goes smoother than previous years.
Yes, it's been a lot of work up front, but hopefully, you know, for everyone who's a voter, when you see the form this year, hopefully you will rejoice for how easy and simple it is for you and for us and just for everybody, and that'll make everybody happy. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's still the internet, so there's always going to be a couple of morons just right, screwing things up royally, no matter what, but hopefully it's not too bad this year again. So, well, today, Jeremy, we are here to discuss some themes used throughout the history of Survivor Series, one of the big four WWE pay-per-views. Every November comes around. Next one's coming up real soon here, and it started all the way back in 1987, and has been going, you know, somewhat strong ever since, I guess. of course, best known for the Survivor Series elimination tag matches, which Rich Kreitsch just loves oh so much. But it's known for many other things, of course. The Undertaker's debut, the Gobbledygooker, the Montreal Screwjob, the first Elimination Chamber match was there, the Shield debut, so just a whole bunch of fun stuff over the years. Jeremy, let me ask you this. Where does Survivor Series rank for you amongst the pay-per-views, would you say? Are you a fan of the show historically? What's your take on it?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like historically I'm a fan of the show. But when I go back through the different Survivor Series cards, and I was doing that sort of in prep for the show today, like, there's not a lot there that I specifically have fond memories of. It's just sort of the idea of Survivor Series is, like, it's a neat idea that it's like, oh, you know, we've got all of these different things. Like, we've got these elimination tag matches of eight men or six men or whatever. And, you know, as a kid, I remember Jerry Lawler and his crew against Doink and the Clowns and whatnot. And so it's like all of these things that at the time, like, I have fond memories of, but going back with my eyes now, we're probably not very good at the time, or especially looking back on them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a lot of people, it's probably the least important to me, of the big four anyway. Like, it just doesn't really feel like a big deal show. Like, Mania obviously is the biggest deal show, of course. The Rumble feels like a big deal. SummerSlam feels like a big deal. Survivor Series just doesn't really reach that level, at least not anymore. I mean, you know, back in the day when it first started, it was this cool concept to people. You know, like you said, all these first time ever, you know, super teams teaming up. They're all elimination matches. It's Hogan's team versus Andre's team. Oh my God, this is so cool. And, you know, as a kid, I did think it was cool seeing it for the first time as a fan. You know, Team Austin versus Team Bischoff, Team Angle versus Team Lesnar. This is awesome. And nowadays, it feels like, well, it's November, it's Survivor Series, here's a bunch of Raw versus SmackDown matches that are just really meaningless. That's kind of what it is nowadays, Jeremy.
Yeah, now it's really sort of taken a back seat. And I think you're seeing it this year especially, where everything has taken a back seat to just the build for Mania is happening now. So it's kind of an afterthought. Whereas I think, especially as a kid, like SummerSlam wasn't the big deal that it used to be. Whereas now they're trying to make SummerSlam the number two of those shows. That, you know, Royal Rumble even is, well, it's a stop on the road to WrestleMania and it's a big kickoff event. But, you know, you see them running running that new football stadium in Las Vegas for SummerSlam and trying to build it as sort of a second WrestleMania weekend and whatnot. And so it's been interesting over time to see how that's kind of switched. Cause yeah, now, like you said, it's just sort of an afterthought and it's definitely the weakest of the big four. And honestly, I don't know if you're making a new big four, I don't know if you include it. Like, do you drop it in favor of, say, Money in the Bank now at this point?
That's what, like, I was thinking. Yeah.
That's kind of taken the spot as the fourth biggest show that they have. But there's still some of that prestige to the Survivor Series name.
I mean, name-wise, there's still nostalgia and history, I guess. But, like, the actual shows themselves, I mean, there's not much on the bone here. I mean, they've been doing this brand warfare for, like, 5 years now. And it's so stupid because the whole thing is like, it's brand warfare. Raw versus SmackDown, yeah. But there are no real stakes to these matches. Nobody wins anything beyond, like, bragging rights, which, okay, fine, whatever. And here's the kicker. It's post-draft. So, right. Like, all the guys on Team Raw this year were literally on SmackDown, like, a month ago. But now they're on Raw, so they bleed Raw red, baby. Here's my red t-shirt. Let's go get them, boys. It's t-shirt wars, Jeremy. That's what it is nowadays. And, you know, again, compared to, like, the Rumble, Mania, SummerSlam, it doesn't feel nowhere near as important as those shows.
Yeah, they kind of hemmed themselves in when they decided that, okay, sweeps week, we have to do the draft to attract people. And then now that kind of leaves them at Survivor Series, where, like, oh, well, now Survivor Series doesn't mean anything. Where if you were trying to schedule it out for, say, like, maximum show impact, you know, to put on the best wrestling show, you would have Survivor Series and then the draft immediately after that, because then you could tell all sorts of interesting stories between those two things of, like, oh, well, these guys were on the same team at Survivor Series and now they're split up, or these guys were on opposite teams at Survivor Series and now they're on the same brand and something happened in the match and caused some heat. And so now that's a feud that you can run with for a few months. But instead of doing that, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, the actual shows don't have to be good, either the TV or the pay-per-views, because everything is already paid for. So nothing really matters. Everything is meaningless. Eat at Arby's. Like, it just doesn't. No one. There's no reason to make it good. And so they're just like, yeah, it is what it is. And the piggies will come for the slop. And so we do.
Remember a few years ago when NXT was part of the brand warfare and you had like Triple H and Shawn Michaels leading the invasion into SmackDown, and oh look, there's Adam Cole and there's Keith Lee and NXT won a bunch of matches that year, and boy oh boy, does that seem like a million years ago at this point. That is not happening again anytime soon, I don't think there, Jeremy.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, you know, who knows? Depending on how fast they're trying to hotshot him, maybe they bring in Bron Breakker next year or something like that. But yeah, no, we're a long, long way from NXT mattering at all in that regard, which is kind of sad because that was like one of the most exciting things was that. I remember that Survivor Series match, the big like tag match with everybody, where you have like Walter gets this incredible reaction and Keith Lee gets this incredible reaction, and ultimately it was totally meaningless.
Yeah, we missed out on Bron Breakker, Woke Joe Gacy, Tony D'Angelo, and the Creed Brothers all wearing paint splattered t-shirts. that would have been something there, I think, there, Jeremy, but we missed out on it, I guess, there. But let's get to these themes here. We have 8 to talk about, and we'll start not at the first show in 87, but on the third show in 89. This is, of course, by Jim Johnston. There's no official title, I don't think, so we'll just call it the Survivor Series 1989 theme. WWF Survivor Series, the Thanksgiving Day tradition, the ultimate in team competition. Tonight, it's the Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team, the Ultimate Warriors versus the Heenan family, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's hard not to hear Vince's voice with the intro there. It's one of the more straightforward songs on the list here. No vocals, just a nice little 80s synth rock kind of thing. Sounds kind of like the bumper music that you would hear in like a sports game on TV back in those days, like the NBA or whatever. But I do appreciate that because it sets the tone of sports and competition and all that stuff. It's a welcome throwback, I think, here, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think so. And it, like, this is, it's just so Jim Johnston. Like, I feel like Jim Johnston's like headstone should have a QR code that plays this song when you scan it, because it's just like all of his like signature things. Like, you hear it and you're like, oh yeah, that's a Jim Johnston song. Like, it's just unmistakable. You can pick it out, and it, you're right, it's just that generic like 80s sports. It could be the bed underneath pretty much anything, and it works. It's just it, yeah.
Yeah, and as Vince said, it's the ultimate in team competition. And, you know, on those first 4 shows, I think, they didn't have singles matches or other tag matches. It was just about these elimination tags, these teams. And, you know, they had feuds within the teams, of course, but the team element was always the focus, much like in sports, you know, basketball, football again. So leaning into that with this rather, you know, kind of nondescript sports music, it may not be intentional on their part. It may have just been the sound of the time, but it does work well in that context, Jeremy.
Oh yeah, definitely. It this is, you know, as sports, well, this won't be the most sports like Survivor Series that we'll talk about, but you know, this is a very, you know, going for that more sports presentation feel, even as, you know, you have some of the fun WWF, you know, early 90s, late 80s sorts of gimmicks and things like that. It's got that grandiosity that you sort of expect from that.
Mm-hmm. And this was also the theme for the Survivor Series reports going into the 90s, which had, of course, Mean Gene running down the cards. So this got a good bit of use after 89. And then I think in 90, the show itself got a new theme that sounded close to this one, but that had a saxophone in it. So, you know, we're a long ways away from a Deadly Game and Limp Bizkit and all that other fun stuff we'll get to later on there, Jeremy, that's for sure.
Hey, if only Limp Bizkit added a little saxophone, then just think how much greater the world would be.
Gonna go now to Survivor Series 1991. This is the show with Hulk Hogan versus The Undertaker for the world title, which had the tagline, "The Gravest Challenge." This is not the official theme of the show. It's more of the secondary theme, which was used for the match and the promos and the report and all that stuff. It's by Jim Johnston off of WWE Uncaged 14. This is Gravest Challenge. So it's pretty similar to the first one here, that classic early 90s WWF sound, and it's funny, you look at the name Gravest Challenge, ooh, it's so ominous and scary, and then you hear the song, and it's da 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 da, it's so light and zippy there, but there is one part where the tempo slows down, and Jim Johnston does those sustained guitar notes, da da da, and the keyboard sounds like the organ in Taker's theme. That's a nice little touch there that does give it more of a serious tone. But then it's right back to the da ba 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 ba. So it's, for a song called Gravest Challenge, it's not the most grave sounding song of all time there, Jeremy, for the most part.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really say Gravest Challenge to me at all. It was funny because, you know, I put all of the songs for this episode in a playlist that I was just listening to on repeat. And this one and the previous one just really blended together for me, where it was kind of hard to tell where one started and the other one stopped. And there's that Rhodes, synth that sits behind everything that kind of, you know, like you mentioned, gets brought to the forefront a little bit in the down tempo section, but it's still nothing about this says Gravest Challenge to me, because it's not even like, if it was, you know, Survivor Series 91, like something, you know, spooky in the title or whatever, then okay, but Gravest Challenge to me, it makes it sound like, well, that's something dire, that's something a grave challenge, and this is not really I'm not feeling grave, I'm not really feeling challenge from this one either.
yeah, but again, this wasn't the official show theme. This was used for like the reports and the promos and stuff like that. So and in that case, you're not just focusing on Hogan versus Taker, you're focusing on the entire show and the other matches on the card. So I guess it does make sense then to put a little nod to Taker in there, but have the song itself just be in line with other generic show themes of the time period, Jeremy. That's my thinking, at least.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, that, like, looking at the card for this show, that match just sits in the middle of the show. So I don't know if this was, they were still sort of in the mindset that this pay-per-view wasn't, like, a really big deal or whatnot, because it's not even the main event, technically. Maybe it was just a way to musically introduce a little something in there, but not necessarily bring it to the forefront. Maybe, you know, it's just Jim Johnston going rogue. And I mean, honestly, you got to think he had very little oversight anyway when he was doing like his whole tenure there. And so, you know, it was probably just, I'll mix in a little Rhodes and make it, you know, give it a little vibe and then back out. Vince wants it to be, you know, more of a bop. And so I'll screw it. That's what I'll give him. I've been doing creative work long enough to know that sometimes you just like, whatever, who cares? Maybe that's maybe that's what's happening here.
That's a good attitude to have, I think, there. Yeah, but but I think the fact that there is that nod to Taker in there at all is somewhat significant, especially since Survivor Series is the show where he debuted the year before, and now it's a year later, and he's beating Hogan for the belt. So there's at least a little sign there that this Undertaker guy is going to be a big deal in the company for many more years to come, which obviously he was.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, they cut his legs out like a week later, but at Tuesday in Texas.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Just kind of a bummer. But as, you know, this happened, when was this show? This show was 91, so I was 6 years old at the time. So I was pretty devastated that Hulk Hogan lost and was pretty excited about him winning the title back, you know. But looking back on it, it's like, wow, man, you just... Why did you even do that title change? It doesn't make any sense. But that's
welcome
what
to the
they
WWF.
Did. It was Hulk.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Moving on now to theme number 3. And this is one of the themes for Survivor Series 1994, which was the last time the show was held on Thanksgiving Eve. This is by Chuck Wild and Rick Rhodes. Great names, by the way. From the First Com Music Library, this is called... Lawman. You're watching Gunsmoke, sponsored by American Tobacco. So we got the Western music here, baby. Got the harmonica, the strings. It's all very heroic and stirring, the whole nine yards. And it's a real left turn from what we've had before with the sports feel, those earlier themes. And it doesn't really have that big, exciting, energetic pay-per-view field theme to it, Jeremy. It's quite different in that respect.
Yeah, they really went all in with the Texas vibe. Like, mm-hmm. To open the show, you've got Vince and Gorilla Monsoon out there in cowboy hats and, you know, in their cowboy shirts. And they just, for whatever reason this year, they decided, we got Chuck Norris, we gotta Western this thing up. And so that's what they did. They went to First Com, which I used to use First Com when I was doing video work at a church in D.C. That was my music library of choice. And so familiar with their work. They do great stuff. And, you know, you go in, you plug in to the system, hey, I need some Western music. And they got Western track 1A, slotted it in, and there you go. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the show is in Texas. The poster had Undertaker in the foreground and these four cowboys in the background. And Taker's whole look and gimmick the first few years was as an Old West Undertaker. That was the thing. And there's a bull skull in the logo as well that year. I mean, they're really playing up the whole Texas Western cowboy whole motif there. So yeah, obviously, you're going to get an Old West song. It just makes too much sense there, Jeremy.
Yep. I was kind of surprised. I would have thought they would have also used this as like Chuck Norris's walkout music, but they found another track that I'm sure was probably from the same library to use for that as well. That was another like, hey, it's a Western song. Plug it in. There you go. And so, yeah, I mean, they just really, they went to San Antonio and were like, what do these people love? They love themselves some Westerns. And so, you know, that they themed it out strongly, which, hey, yeah, I can appreciate that.
I just did some quick research, and wouldn't you know it, the song that Chuck Norris used as an entrance theme, it's called To the Rescue, and it's by Chuck Wilde and Rick Rhodes, these two guys from the First Comm Music Library.
There you go.
Just banging the money there, Jeremy. Good for you, man. Good for you.
I know my stock music, right?
Yeah. But Chuck Norris, of course, he played a lawman on Walker, Texas Ranger. So that ties into the song there. And there was that famous moment of him kicking Jeff Jarrett, which Jarrett does just the most comical bump of all time into a headstand. It's so, so funny. But yeah, they went with a different song as his theme there for the show, which, you know, is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chuck Norris was a big deal at this time, too, because,
oh, yeah,
you know, you're on broadcast TV when broadcast TV was even bigger than it is now, and you're on one of the most popular shows going that ran for a very long time. And so, man, this was like peak Chuck Norris, and they got him to come in and kick Jeff Jarrett. And yeah, if you're gonna get Chuck, you gotta go all out.
Jumping ahead now to Survivor Series 1998, which had the infamous Deadly Game Tournament for the vacant world title. The show where The Rock turned heel and joined forces with the Corporation, which means we're talking about a very famous theme here. This is by Jim Johnston featuring Kyle Gordon and AZ from the hip-hop group The Firm. Off of WWE Anthology, this is, of course, Deadly Game.
Dice, play your cards, break the rules, that's who you are. Whoever said play it safe, never played the game. So many players, but too many pawns, too many judges say what's right or wrong. Let them jump into the fire if they want to play.
So I could talk about this song all day. I mean, this is a proper jam. I love this one. It has so much great stuff in it. That slow, moody intro at the start that just builds up. The smoky vocals. The background singers, of course. Because it's a deadly game that we play as we live our lives. Deadly game. It's so great, Jeremy. It's pure, cheesy wrestling goodness. I love it.
Oh yeah, I mean, this song is so catchy. It's a total earworm. Like, you hear this and you're not going to stop singing it for a good week or so.
The vibe I get with a lot of this is, I don't know about you, but it kind of reminds me of like a really dark James Bond theme. Roll the dice, play your cards, break the rules, that's who you are. Whoever said play it safe never played the game. Two simple rules the devil hands us. Make your mistakes, but no second chances. Judgment Day calls in on markers. Haunted hell, it's getting darker. As they carry you away, you wonder what went wrong. Like, it's all so very serious, and taking the theme of survival and making it about people trying to survive the deadly game of life and often failing. Like, and remember, this is for a tournament with Al Snow and Dwayne Gill in it. Like, this is some, like, heavy-duty doom and gloom stuff here, Jeremy. What's going on here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this song is bleak. It's like, you know, right away, you know, the chorus, because it's a deadly game that we play as we live our lives. Like, I've definitely gone through some struggles, but I would never categorize my daily life as a deadly game. And, you know, I don't know what Kyle Gordon's been going through, but hopefully since then he's gotten some help and he's worked some things out. Or, you know, maybe he's gotten some backup and has taken out whoever's after him. But it's just this really sort of like dark, brooding sort of thing. But then what cracks me up is it has that late 90s, like, let's just wedge a rapper in here thing.
Right, yeah.
It made me think of the scene at the end of Walk Hard, where it's like this whole band of like Jewel and like all of these people, and they're covering Walk Hard. And then out of nowhere, like one of the Wu-Tang Clan like comes on stage and does this like little rap that like makes no sense. And then they just transition back into the song. And it really gives me that vibe that it was just Jim Johnston and, Kyle Gordon were, they're doing their thing. They're like, all right, now we got to bring in this rapper. Like, all right, it's the third or fourth most famous member of the firm. Let's bring AZ in to do a verse. AZ does a verse. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't relate to the rest of the song. You're like, all right. Anyway, it's a deadly game. Just back into
it. Here's your check, Mr. AZ. Thank you so much. Here's the door. Don't call us. We'll call you. Thank you. Goodbye. to me, the rap section is the one part I don't really care for. It's a bit weak to me. It does touch on, you know, dark stuff like eternal sleep and addicts and stuff like that. But in my opinion, I would have gone with a Jim Johnston guitar solo where he just wails for like 30 seconds and then that leads back into the chorus for the end there. I think that would have been a much more preferable element to me. But look, it's the late 90s, so, you know, here's the rapper instead. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this guy's famous. You're like, well, kind of.
Yeah. Well, actually, this song was later remade in, like, 2006, I believe, by Theory of a Dead Man. And they turned it into, like, a fast-paced rock song. Just it's not the same as the original. It loses its luster, I think. And I mean, it's fine, but it's just the original is just, you can't top it, Jeremy, I don't think.
Yeah, that sounds like they were so concerned with whether or not they could that they never stopped to consider whether or not they should. Because there's nothing about, like, it's good the way it is. The only thing, like you said, it really needs is like a guitar solo. Like, I could see if like some band wanted to do that, or I mean, I guess if you wanted to make it like a little bit harder, but still, you gotta keep it melodic. You don't want to speed it up, that's for sure. Making it sort of a fast-paced rock song from Theory of a Dead Man doesn't sound like it does justice to this masterpiece that they've got going on here.
Mm-hmm. I looked it up. They did use it as a theme for No Way Out 2006. So the remake was used as a pay-per-view theme there. And I guess they're trying to recapture the magic for the next generation, I guess. But again, it's just not the same as the original, Jeremy, I don't think.
I'm surprised this never got used for something like Triple H related.
Oh, yeah. That's a good shout. Yeah. Actually, when the song was first written, he wasn't in the game yet, I don't think. He was still in DX. And also, he was injured, too. He wasn't even on Survivor Series 98. So
I think, like, if you're going to reuse it, and I don't know what that No Way Out card was, but, you know, maybe you wait to reuse this for something with him in it.
Well, that would have been a SmackDown show, and he was on Raw. So, there you go.
Well, missed opportunities.
Up next, we're going to Survivor Series 2001, which of course had the invasion angle reaching its thrilling conclusion there. Team WWF versus Team Alliance, winner takes all. Spoiler alert, WWF wins. The theme for that show is by Puddle of Mud off of the album Come Clean. This is Control. Now firmly in the licensing songs for pay-per-views era here. It's 01 as well, which means that we're also in the new metal, alt metal, golden age here, baby. Just Puddle of Mud, Drowning Pool, Saliva, POD, Creed, Marilyn Manson, the whole shebang-a-bang. It all starts here. And as for this song, I like it a lot. I really do enjoy it. I'm a sucker for songs that start on one track for the verses, and then they have like this big yelling crescendo chorus, and this definitely is one of those songs, Jeremy.
I like the song, yeah, and the chorus is perfect, like sound wise for the type of promo video that WWE has made, basically dating back to the Attitude Era. It's sort of that soaring guitar sort of sound that's like, it's hard, but you get that like that vibe where it's sort of picked up and there's that, you know, that high heights, that soaring feeling, that makes it just that I hear that sound and you're like, oh yeah, this would be a perfect WWE paper song, pay-per-view song. That is, until you look at the lyrics of this song.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of get it. They're trying to connect you to the whole thing of like control and fighting for control of the company. They're trying to connect it that way, but at the same time, the song is about like a tumultuous relationship between two people that's very passionate but also very toxic. I love the way you look at me. I feel the pain you place inside. You lock me up inside your dirty cage while I'm alone inside my mind. I love the way you rake my skin. I feel the hate you place inside. I need to get your voice out of my head, because I'm that guy you'll never find. I need to feel you. You need to feel me. I can't control you. You're not the one for me. No. So there's lots of love, lots of conflict. And, you know, it's a good summation of the relationship between WWE and its fans in a lot of ways there. But as far as, like, a pay-per-view theme, you know, it's not really one-to-one there, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, particularly once you get to the bridge, which is, I love the way you look at me. I love the way you smack my ass. I love the dirty
yes.
things you do. I have
yes.
control of you. It's like, guys, I don't think this has much to do with the invasion angle here. What's interesting, though, is I tried to go back on Peacock and pull up the pay-per-view and see how they used it, because I have to know how they made this song work, because lyrically it's just so insane for a pay-per-view. And they've replaced it completely on Peacock. Now, I don't know if that's a licensing thing or if that's, you know, them being like, oh, this is kind of strange. But you can go on YouTube or Daily Motion or something like that, and you can find the old promos. And it seems like what they did was they use verse 2, they use the chorus, they use like a little instrumental section and then they go back to the chorus. And so they've kind of like skimped around anything that's too suggestive. You know, I love the way you rake my skin. Like, maybe you could interpret that through some lens of like, you know, guys like a New Japan, like, let's chop each other as hard as we can kind of thing. Like, yeah, I like the pain. Bring it on, man. Like, that you can maybe see it that way or something like that. But yeah, they've sort of tucked away all of the other things. Like, no, don't look at the verse. Definitely don't look at the bridge. Just this chorus and this verse, and that's it. Like, that's what this song is.
Yeah, there's a bit of dissonance there with, you know, on the one hand, you've got, like, the fate of this company hangs in the very balance, and Paul Heyman screaming, death to WWF! Death to sports entertainment! And on the other hand, you have, I love the way you smack my ass. Like, there's a fair bit of dissonance there, you know? But then again, like, the invasion angle itself wasn't exactly on the money there either there, Jeremy. So it's kind of, you know, hand in hand there, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I was watching some things back today, and it's just such mixed emotions, because on one hand, like, there were a few things that they did in the invasion that I think were great. Like, I think the final Survivor Series match between the two groups, even though it makes absolutely no sense who the teams are by the time you get there, like if you tell someone at the onset of, hey, WWF and WCW are going to feud, like, great, they're going to do it at Survivor Series, awesome. What are the team? Who's on the WCW team? You're like, well, Shane McMahon, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Kurt Angle. You're like, wait, what? Like, it makes no sense. But
oh,
I thought, like,
and also there's also a bunch of ECW guys there too. So, you know, just add those guys to the mix there. Yeah.
Which, like, that even, like, it kind of made sense. And so, like, okay. And it gives shine to Rob Van Dam, who at the time I was like the biggest Rob Van Dam fan in the world. And so I was just ecstatic to see him getting like a big spot like that. So yeah, I was like, all right, I can forgive that. But I thought the match itself and sort of the drama at the end, It worked. I mean, it's definitely, you know, that overbooked late 90s, early 2000s WWF style where, you know, everything's just, there's run-ins and interference and just chaos. But I thought that for that, it's a really well done one. And you've got Vince coming out at the end and he's just maniacally raising his hands and like bouncing.
Yes,
like, yes,
I did it.
Yes. Like, that's great.
I won.
And this also, I mean, the SmackDown before this pay-per-view, you get, honestly, I may consider the greatest promo of all time from Paul Heyman. When you consider just both the quality of the promo and the fact that a promo is supposed to talk you into buying a show or buying a ticket or what have you, just the way that promo that Paul Heyman cuts on that is just out of this world, that like still like almost kind of like makes you emotional watching it, because you can tell that there's real emotion in that for him, that when he's saying like, screw you, you stole my ideas, you stole my life, like, that there's a part of like the real Paul Heyman that means that. And it comes across, and it was just, you know, it's out of this world. So even though generally, yes, the whole invasion angle and all of that was kind of a hot mess, there's some nuggets in there if you go looking for them.
I mean, it did put Rob Van Dam on the map for a lot of people. It did do that, which is great, of course, but look, you know, when Stephanie McMahon is in charge of ECW, something's gone wrong, okay? I'm sorry, but like, when Billy Kidman is like the third biggest WCW guy you have, something's not right, all right? Come on. So yeah, hot mess is a good descriptor there for it, yeah.
Yes, there is, though, given the way that the past couple years have gone for WWE, something from this pay-per-view that I think that they should bring back. And that is the one-year
immunity
battle royal.
Yeah, that test one, right, yeah.
I mean, I think you do that, you make it a shoot. I bet the boys would be pretty excited about that. I don't know.
That'd be great, yeah.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean, like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages have arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the UV video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Well, anyway, it's a few years later, and it's time for Survivor Series 2003, which is actually my first Survivor Series as a fan. And I was actually at the Go Home Raw for that show in Boston. That was my first wrestling show ever, actually. So this theme is by Limp Bizkit off their album Results May Vary. This is Build a Bridge. Consider it like the forgotten Limp Bizkit WWE song, because, you know, everyone knows My Way, they all know Rollin', Crack Addict, but this one I think is the least remembered of those kind of collaborations between the two sides there. But it's also the first pay-per-view theme that stuck onto me as a fan, and I'm not a big Limp Bizkit guy at all, really, but I gotta say, I like this one a lot. I do. I really enjoy it. It's a much more emotional, introspective Fred Durst, which I think helps a lot, because, you know, he's not going, yeah, chicky blah blah blah, which, you know, it's a softer side, which I do like a lot more, I think, there, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I always, so I was right in the age range to greatly appreciate Limp Bizkit. You know, I was like 15, 16 as all of their Significant Other and Chocolate Starfish and all that was coming out. So it was like perfect for me. So at that point in time, like, yes, I loved Limp Bizkit. And this was the album that sort of like fell off the map. Like, there was Behind Blue Eyes was the main single on this. And it kind of, I think people didn't really know what to do with it. And, you know, Fred Durst is not, he's, you know, not exactly the greatest singer in the world. You know, Fred Durst, no Neil Cicada, let's say. But he, and on Behind Blue Eyes, that really comes out that, like, ooh, like, he's not great here. But on Build a Bridge, like, it's a, I would have never guessed that this was Limp Bizkit if you didn't tell me ahead of time. Like, if I didn't know that this was coming off that album and it was this pay-per-view theme from Limp Bizkit, I would not have guessed, like, oh yeah, that totally sounds like a Limp Bizkit song. Because I feel like they actually do a really nice job with this. Like, surprisingly, I also, yeah, really like this song, like, still today, and not in any sort of an ironic way.
Well, first of all, it's Neil Sedaka, not Cicada, so respect your elders there, sir, please. But yeah, I do agree. It does sound, you know, nice and clean and good there. And thematically, it's interesting because it's about trying to stay connected to someone despite hardships. There's a way is the repeated line throughout the song. Even though it's going to crumble down, I'll keep building till you come around. So It's about tenacity. It's about not giving up. And those are common traits in many wrestling theme songs, of course. But I think when you put it through this kind of melancholic, softer lens like you do here, it doesn't have that same macho, aggressive punch as other wrestling songs do. There is that power there in the chorus, of course, but, you know, the song overall, it definitely has, you know, its fair share of kind of mellow valleys, you could say there, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think, like, if you put the chorus of this up against, say, the chorus of that Puddle of Mud song, you'd find some similarities. There's that, like, soaring sort of vibe that I was talking about that you get from the guitars just feeling very big and open. And on this song, you actually get, you know, Wes Borland, who's the Limp Bizkit guitarist, who's fantastic. Like, the one of the most underrated musicians of all time because he's in Limp Bizkit, but is a genius. But then also Brian Head Welch from Korn is also on this song. So they have two guitarists and they really kind of play off each other, and you get that in the chorus. It just feels very big and very open. And so I think one of the reasons they may have chosen this is that they like, the video department seemed to really like these songs where you had that dynamic range where you were able to show, you know, clips that you could put the audio from those clips over the music and it would be sort of low key. And then once it hit the chorus, it would, you know, sort of open up, and that's where the clips of Austin hitting a stunner comes in and things like that. And so in a way, it's not that dissimilar from the way they used My Way, because that's another song that it's, you know, the verses on that are very down-tempo. And then when the chorus hits, you get the yeah, and then it's like big and the cymbals are crashing and, like, you know, everything's like big and open. And so I think that's sort of the reason maybe why they went with this, even though it's this like melancholy song about this relationship, you know, on the verge of ending. The video department at WWE, who I just cannot gush enough about, they're just that good that they'll take a song like that and make it work to be this exciting video package that makes you want to watch a match.
Yeah, that comparison to My Way is pretty apt there. You're right, with the softness in the verses, and then it ramps up with the chorus there. But I think with My Way, there's a bit more attitude to that song.
For sure.
Especially with the yeah in there, and, you know, and Roland and Crack Addict are your more typical badass songs there. So again, this one is more of an outlier in that case. But I still enjoy it. Again, I still enjoy it a lot. It's just that, you know, compared to those other songs there, this doesn't have that typical Limp Bizkit-y, in-your-face attitude and aggression, I don't think.
Oh, definitely.
And they're back now. It's so crazy. Limp Bizkit are back in 2021 with a new album. And Fred Durst has new hair. And Wes Borland still looks like a Cenobite from Hellraiser. It's wild, Jeremy. It's, you know, crazy times, man. Crazy times.
Time is a flat circle.
Well, I mentioned that I went to the Go Home Raw in 03 in Boston. Well, Survivor Series 2008 also took place in Boston. I wasn't there, though, which, looking at the reception, was probably a good thing, I think. The theme for this show is by AC/DC off the album Black Ice. This is Spoilin' for a Fight.
See trouble coming, man. We're coming to a ball, sliding down the road. Come on, yeah, come on down. We're gonna run.
the previous couple songs, we talked about how, you know, they may have tenuous connections to wrestling, perhaps, or they're very emotional and kind of moody. Not the case here. I mean, it's right there in the title, Spoilin' for a Fight. There you go. That's it. No questions, no confusion. It's all right there. Because look, you know, all AC/DC songs are either about fighting, sex, or rock and roll. And sometimes all three, you know. So take your emotional, tormented relationship nonsense and hit the bricks, because it's fighting time, Jeremy. This song rocks.
Definitely. I mean, you know, AC/DC, there's arena rock, which is, you know, the idea that, oh, it's meant for the band to play that song in an arena. Whereas I feel like AC/DC makes arena rock, which is they have meant these songs to be played by sports like groups over the loudspeakers in arenas. Like, it's like their songs are just, they're laser focused for that. They basically just make one song, but man, I love that song. It's so good. Like, you know, if Shoot to Thrill doesn't do it for you, then I don't think you have ears. Like, AC/DC, it's not a band that I listen to that often. It's not a band I ever think about, but whenever they come on, I'm like, man, I love AC/DC. And so listening to this every time it came up in the playlist, I was just rocking out, like, yeah, I'm spoiling for a fight. Let's go. Let's do this. It's such a perfect fit for a WWE pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big AC/DC fan, and I always remember the Stephen King quote, because he's a big fan of theirs too. And someone once told him, like, you know, oh, AC/DC, all their songs sound the same. And he goes, so what's the problem? Because, yeah, look, AC/DC, they never try to reinvent the wheel. They know what they're good at, and that's coming up with nice, simple, hard rock songs with cheeky lyrics. Make your heartbeat thump and make your starter jump. I'm a fighting fool, and I'm hungry for you. Spoiling for a fight. Like, that's it. Just straightforward, 3 minutes, in and out, done, next song, and it's perfect for a wrestling show theme. And, you know, you would hope that with Vince being such a big AC/DC fan himself, he would follow their lead at times and keep things nice and simple there with the storylines, but not the case, I guess, there, Jeremy, so.
Well, he does follow their lead in just doing the same thing over and over mm-hmm. and over, so, I mean, at least he's got that down.
That is true, yeah.
But it is good that you did not end up at the pay-per-view for this one, as listeners may not realize, but Survivor Series 2008 voted worst pay-per-view of the year in the Wrestling Observer Awards that year.
Indeed.
And also the recipient of most disgusting promotional tactics. So, you know, big night that night in Boston.
Yeah, this was the show where I think it was supposed to be Triple H versus Jeff Hardy versus Vladimir Kozlov, of all people, in a triple threat match for the world title. And, you know, before the show, they, you know, kayfabe, they found Jeff Hardy unconscious in his hotel room, and they replaced him with Edge, I believe, which did not go over well with people by any stretch there. So, yeah, I'm glad I didn't go to this show, because I would have been a bit disappointed there, I think. So.
Well, and what they did was they didn't even bring Edge out initially. They were like, you know, Edge is out too. He's not going to be here. So it's just Triple H and Vladimir Kozlov. And then they went like 13 minutes, just the two of them, which no one wants. And then Vicky Guerrero comes out and is like, he's here. It is a triple threat. And of course, Edge comes out. And Edge, you know, is about to win the match. And then Jeff Hardy somehow returns, and he has like a bandage on his neck, which I don't know what that was supposed to, like, what are they suggesting happened? Like, he slipped in the shower, or I don't know. And it was just, yeah, it was bad. And then, you know, to cap the night off, you got a 3-star special out of John Cena and Chris Jericho. And that was the high point. And so, Not exactly a stellar entry in the Survivor Series history.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they got the spoiled part right, because that sounds utterly rotten, folks. Come on, let's go. Hey, here we go. All right. So we've got the last theme here of the episode, and it's for Survivor Series 2017, which had Brock Lesnar versus AJ Styles, and a bunch of stuff I do not remember at all, because you know, all these recent brand warfare shows just kind of blend together a lot of times. But you will remember this theme, because it's by the very memorable Kid Rock off the album Sweet Southern Sugar. This is Greatest Show on Earth. Gone from the not-so-subtleties of AC/DC to the really not-so-subtleties of Kid Rock, because this is just a red, white, and blue, tobacco-chewing, whiskey-drinking, fireworks spectacular. This is the greatest motherfucking show on earth, you son of a bitch. And look, if there's any sort of mood that is perfect for WWE, it's just pure over-the-top bravado. It's a match made in heaven, Jeremy.
Totally. And the verse is completely nonsensical. Like, you know, okay, so I'm a drift store. Like, what? I was built to invade. Are those connected? Are drift stores invading? I'm the realest mother effer, and I'm coming with age. What? I'm rib cage? Huh? It doesn't make any sense. But hey, it's the greatest effing show on earth, so you better get with it, because otherwise Kid Rock, he's got a knuckle sandwich for you, sir.
Yeah, I'm a full-blown down-home Rolling Stone. I'm a cyclone. I'll shit wherever I roam. I'm a full-blown freak show, something to see. Got him lined up and waiting, taking bullets from me. I'm a Mack truck. I'm trucking down a one-way street. You better move, bitch. My fuck tank's on E. What a poet. What a way with words there, Jeremy.
Like, is he trying to say, like, he doesn't have any left to give? Is that...
That's the implication he's going for. I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. Or he's just had a lot of coitus. I'm not sure what he's trying to say there.
I do like how, as the man of God, you're keeping it clean. I do like that, so... But in all seriousness, I do kind of like this. It's pretty catchy, I can't lie. And I do appreciate just how earnest and sincere the whole thing is. Like, when he's singing Love You When You Hate Us, Welcome to the Greatest Fucking Show on Earth, I believe Kid Rock believes that with every ounce of his being. Again, same with WWE. They truly believe they are the greatest show on earth. They're not, but they're pretty earnest about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect match of artist and company here, in both in terms of their own sort of delusion and, you know, the grandiosity that they try to, you know, present themselves with and whatnot. And you're right, like, the song's not that bad. Like, am I putting this on my road trip mix? Probably not. But if it, you know, comes on a pay-per-view, or if it does show up on, you know, like a Spotify radio station or something like that, I'm probably not hitting skip. Like, it's fine. You know, totally acceptable rock song. Like, I can be all right with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said before in this show, but, you know, everybody has at least one song that you like. And with Kid Rock, I do like a few of his songs. And again, I like this one too, which, I mean, listen, it's no masterpiece by any stretch. I know what I'm listening to here, but still, I do kind of enjoy it. So there you go.
Well, and also it appears that, you know, similar to what I was talking about with AC/DC, that they, you know, they make music to be played at sporting events. The cover of the single for this song is like fireworks going off at a baseball game, which to me signals one that, okay, yeah, like he totally knows what he's doing here, and he's expecting, like, okay, they're going to play this song at sporting events. You would think, though, that that would give him pause on maybe some of the lyrical content of this song to make it really easy to be played in public, right?
Yes. Take me out to the ball game. Take my fuck tanks on E. Just a little bit of a strange dichotomy there between the two songs. So, you know, all the families are there, you know, dun, 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 dun. I'm a Mack truck, motherfucker. Just a bit strange there for sure.
Gotta go send little Timmy to get some Cracker Jack because Kid Rock's about to come out and tell us about how he's a rib cage in a dime store and he's built to invade. And
all right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And Jeremy, thank you so much for being here. This was just so much fun having you on again. And it looks like we survived, nudge, nudge, this series, nudge, nudge, of themes, huh?
It did. Even though we're wearing different colored t-shirts, we didn't have to come to blows. And so,
what? You son of a bitch. Are you telling me that I'm wearing a blue shirt, but you're wearing a red shirt? Oh, you mother. Oh, you're getting it now, you son of a bitch.
I just put this red shirt on yesterday, sir, and I will die a death defending it.
Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
You can find me on Twitter at Jeremy Sexton. You should probably stop using Twitter, and so should I, but until we all do, that's where I am. And yeah, I mean, that's really it. You can find me there. And yeah, that's it.
Okay. And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. You can find all the great podcasts on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. If you want to discuss this episode or the topics, you can do so at the VOW Discord. That's voicesofwrestling.com/Discord. If you want to donate to the show, you can do that. Just go to voicesofwrestling.com/donate and click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. Jeremy, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
Thank you.
All right, for Jeremy Sexton, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.